This is Pushing the Odds on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Las Vegas, here's Matt Perrault.
So, Rhonda, let's go back and start with when you knew from the MMA, when you were done there, when you knew in your mind, I'm not going to fight anymore.
I never said that.
Ah, so there is a possibility that you could go back in time?
There's a possibility that I could go back in time? That's your question to me?
Go back in time and fight. Go back in the octagon.
I do not have the ability to go back in time, no.
No. Would you fight again?
I don't know.
As cringeworthy as it was live, as it is recorded, and I'm not knocking Mike Golic, the questions weren't great. The answers were equally bad. And Chuck Mendenhall, MMAfighting.com, wrote a great piece on what exactly is going on with Ronda Rousey. And if you ask her about her MMA history, she simply does not want to talk about it. We go to the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans hotline. Chuck Mendenhall joining us here on Pushing the Odds. Chuck, Matt Perrault, how are you?
Hey, what's happening, fella?
Appreciate the time. Your piece was phenomenal. That's why I wanted to bring you on. Kind of trying to get into the head of Ronda Rousey a little bit and why she does these interviews. The ESPN Car Wash, it wasn't just that show that there was a problem. She had a problem on First Take with her and Max Kellerman going back and forth, and other interviews I saw were a little bit better, but they all were still kind of awkward. One, why does Ronda do these? I know they're promotional hits for WWE, but why does she say yes to doing them when she knows what the questions are going to be about, and that's her MMA career?
Well, that's the puzzling thing, right, man? Because obviously she's only on this car wash to begin with because of MMA. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
To expect people to sidestep it and not bring it up would be foolish on her part. And I'm positive she knew they were coming. So, you know, it's basically just some pleasantries and plug what you're going to plug and get out of there. It puzzled me why she went in there with an attitude to be confrontational. You know what I mean? In these short bursts. So that part was really weird, but it just continues to, you know, fuel this thing that she can't handle her losses and in mixed martial arts. This is something she can no longer think about without a storm cloud forming over her and all that stuff. But it makes it extremely, extremely awkward, man, even for the new audience at WWE and all that to come in and want to embrace her when they know that this thing is hovering over her like this.
Like, she has an agent, right? I mean, the agent has to give her coached answers. Even if the answers are bad, they're better than what she gave.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like she's got malpractice from a PR standpoint.
I keep wondering who she surrounds herself with, to be completely honest, because I feel like she's been very, very tone deaf. Nobody's telling her the importance of just segueing better. Like, if somebody asks you about MMA, just basically say, you know what, I'm focusing on my wrestling career, and MMA at this point is behind me. You could say something as simple as that and move on, but Ronda Rousey just is not, for whatever reason, I feel like seeing, like, I guess her true colors come out. But she doesn't want to do that, and I think she really shuts herself off to the outside world. Hmm. And I don't know who she surrounds herself with otherwise.
Chuck Mendenhall joining us here on Pushing the Odds, talking about Ronda Rousey and her history. And the one thing that is really interesting is the word retire, Chuck. She won't state the word retired. She won't talk about she. Last two fights, both brutal losses. She won't even acknowledge those losses, but she won't say that she's done, even though Dana White has stated that he does not believe Ronda Rousey will ever fight again. Why won't she just admit that?
That's a good question, man. And she points out that, you know, she left her judo career and she never mentioned the R word either. But that's a completely different thing because nobody followed her in her judo career. Only a very specific audience followed that. But everybody followed. She was pop transcendent, you know, in her MMA career. And I feel like that's one of those things that because there was no closure, and I'm even just closure in terms of thanking her fans or, anything to basically separate her from becoming this false idol. I think that a lot of people see her as now. She just didn't do it. And so I don't think she's coming back. Maybe she wants to leave that open, but we've seen plenty of people in the fight game who say they're retired and they come out. I mean, it's just almost expected. Nobody takes you as a concrete answer, but in the short run, you think that that might just be the way to do it. But in one way or another, she could address any of this in any way possible just to get, you know, stop people from speculating on it.
Right. And the other thing that is sort of odd, Chuck, is that she could be, you know, revered and held up as the woman that built MMA, the female fighting platform. She could be showered with praise, and she could be looked at as a hero for so many young girls coming up and showing that you could make a massive career and cross over into movies. She's missing all of that, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, she had that, too. She had all of everything you said. I felt like she really did. I think that just like Hoyce Gracie back at UFC 1, you know, kind of got everybody into Brazilian jiu-jitsu, she was this barrier breaker that brought the women into the UFC. And a lot of girls basically, you know, like saw what she was doing and felt empowered, started doing martial arts or other sports. She stood for a lot. And I felt like how she handled herself in defeat is my biggest criticism because, you know, she was a champion beyond the cage when she was winning, but then she became something else when she lost. And I felt like I think that there's this growing sense of, I don't know, just something in the air that says, you know, she wasn't who we thought she was, you know, right, as time has gone on. And she doesn't seem to care about that. And I feel like that's the million. That's why everybody, I think, you know, you see Max Kellerman, who has actually been a proponent of hers and has spoke of her as glowingly as we were talking about from when she was winning, but he's defended her the whole way, and she grows accusatory towards him. The chip on her shoulder is something that's hard to really fathom, but she is in a weird way throwing a lot of that away. Like all that goodwill and all that, you know, championing outside so many different causes, it's all going away, and I feel like she's kind of wants it that way. I don't think she really wants to be in the spotlight much longer.
Chuck, this is kind of a weird question because we know that WWE is staged and predetermined, but the storylines for her going forward, can they not have her lose? Does she have to win every fight?
That's a good question, man. See, I did a piece for The Ringer where I basically was pondering this very question. Like, realistically, for her to fail at WWE, it's going to be that she failed to perform, right? So the losses, if they're predetermined, which we know everything is choreographed and everything, but like, she knows that, but if she doesn't sell it well, if she's not able to, you know, handle her mic skills well, or if she just isn't, you know, translate the way she wants, I wonder how that will affect her, because now that we've seen how she is, you know, after she doesn't live up to her own expectations, I guess, it's a little scary to contemplate, honestly, man. She is a very nice person. I've had the opportunity to talk to her many times, and I know from talking to people within the WWE, they really love her. Like, she's been, like, they describe her as a sweetheart and everything, and everybody's gravitating towards her. It'd be really interesting to see, though, if she has a poor showing, if she just, you know, kind of folds under the pressure, because it is a performance, man. It's a nighttime soap.
Right.
So she's going to have some mic skills and some of that it factor that's going to sell with a microphone in an arena of, you know, 12,000 people. And I think that remains to be seen. There's a lot of people who see her as very wooden and very, she has not traditionally translated well with the microphone. So her work is cut out for her, but I guess it's wait and see on this thing, man. But for her sake, I think that you got to kind of hope that she performs well enough, you know. But I don't think if she loses, I think that she'll be able to handle it, obviously, because she knows it's coming.
Yeah, that's a good point. It won't be a shock. It won't be like the Holly Holm or the Amanda
Nunes.
She's
complicit in that. Yeah.
Right, she's signing off on it. But you're right about her being sort of wooden. And the one thing that surprised me during the interview that she said that, and look, she has a personal life, and she has a famous person that she's been with for a long time, and a fellow fighter, and she says she wants to be, you know, barefoot and pregnant. And it just seems kind of odd to me to say that, given the fact that it's still a lot of training to be in the WWE, right? I mean, it's not like you just walk in and start wrestling, right?
Oh, man, it's very, very tough what she's pursuing. And she's coming in as a star, obviously, and those expectations are really big. Her first big performance is at this WrestleMania coming up next month. It's you know, she's basically stepping into another pressure cooker that she's going to have to, you know, be sublime in. And I have my reservations. I think everybody should kind of taper their expectations, honestly. But, you know, hopefully she's able to pull that off. But I do believe her when she says, you know, I think you're referencing she's just basically like, you know, I could go away and live in the mountains or live on a farm and be perfectly happy. I do believe her on that stuff. She's 31 years old now, and, she's had her taste of fame. I think doing that, all the global traveling she was for the UFC and just doing all the marketing and everything took its toll on her and probably in some level informed her that she's not cut out for this type of thing. You know what I mean? Not on a long scale. So I believe this is probably, this stretch she's about to do is probably the last public stretch we'll see of Ronda Rousey.
I wish her the best. I know there's mental illness in her family, and I hope everything works out well for her. It's an odd story, and I don't think we've come to the end of it yet for her at all. Chuck, great stuff. Thank you for the time today. Really appreciate it.
You got it, man. Thanks so much.
That is Chuck Mendenhall. His piece for MMAfighting.com on Ronda Rousey is really, really interesting, and I would recommend reading it if you're interested in Ronda Rousey. Well, the wheels are off right now in Miami, and it's not for the Marlins. It's for John Lester, who has now given up, and this is not really his fault because he gave up a triple to start this inning. Kyle Schwarber completely misplayed it in left field, and then he gave up a double in this inning that scored two runs after Kyle Schwarber totally misplayed a single, and now they drew the infield in, and the infield really should not have been in, but instead a little ground ball seeing eye single goes right by Addison Russell, and now we're tied. It's 4-4 in the bottom of the third inning right now. Lester, 2 1/3, 5 hits, 4 runs, all earned, 3 walks for John Lester, who was supposed to be, quote, the ace. Now, I'm a gigantic John Lester fan. I've watched him for years, going back to 2007 in Game 4 of the World Series. I was in Colorado watching him win the World Series for the Red Sox. I was on the field at Coors Field with John Lester. I love the guy. But his career, I've often stated this, that the end part of the contract with Chicago was going to be problematic. It's why the Red Sox did not sign him to the 7-year deal, I believe it was, that the Cubs did. And look, it's one start, it's opening day. I'm not going to say the guy's going to have a bad year. It's just that Lester's a great postseason pitcher. He's a great money pitcher. But I think he could take, we could start to see Father Time catching up here with John Lester. Him having a rocky year in Chicago at the top of that rotation would not surprise me, to be quite honest. I just think the Cubs lineup is so good that they'll overcome any starting pitching issues that they may have. See you later to my bet, unfortunately. I thought this was going to be a low-scoring game today. Not the case. 8 runs in through 2 1/3 innings. The over-under was 8. I took the under. We are going to see the over here in this game for sure. We have much more to come. It is Pushing the Odds, SB Nation Radio.